Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Do we live in a post-fact era? We'll get around to that on The Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of The Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. Sir?
Hello, good to see you, Ian.
Wonderful to see you. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Here he is, himself, in person.
Well, thank you, Rex and Ira. We should mention Ira's award.
We should. Ira was awarded the highest honor from the New York News Publishers Association this week, the John Peter Zenger Award for a career of dedication to the First Amendment, I believe.
Thank you for mentioning it. It really was an honor. It's nice to be remembered, as Martin Short would say, but thank you very much.
It was a great honor, and when you think of the number of years, I mean, we just have to say here, just do it a little by graphical thing. Ira started as a sports writer, a kid covering sports, who had this big choice, as I recall you talking about your career. Am I going to go up to the big city and be a sports writer, or am I going to perhaps stay here and do the whole thing? And so you move from sports writer to news to city editor to managing editor to general manager to publisher.
Every time I thought I was going to leave, they promoted me. And when I became publisher, I realized there was nowhere else to go. Anyway, thank you very much. And congratulations. Thing. The Times Union won a number of editorial excellence awards. It was a very nice affair here in Albany the other night.
Yeah. Alan, would you like to pat us on the back too while we were doing
this
to ourselves?
Yes, he raised it. I appreciate it.
I started all of this because, you know, we run a good shop here and we have the best.
And Alan believes he's made me a star, so I think it's good that he rebels in our...
Actually, Ira, that's really unfair. I don't believe I made you a star. I know I made you a star.
Speaking of stars, okay, the star that is falling before we get to politics is Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes, architect of Fox News Channel, the $20 billion a year behemoth that is fueling 21st Century Fox and the other enterprises of Rupert Murdoch. Roger Ailes, longtime political consultant, consigliere to the right wing, who created this notion of intentionally biased media in the United States, I would say. Roger Ailes is out. Wow. Huge. Huge, I say.
I don't think there's any way that we can overstate how important a story this is, both in terms of the media landscape and the political landscape in this country. Because as you point out, what he did at Fox created it out of whole cloth, and the influence that it reached in a relative short amount of time is nothing short of remarkable, and it's influenced the political system. Arguably, it is the kind of network that has created where we are now in the Republican Party and Donald Trump. And so with his departure, and we can talk perhaps about why he's leaving, because he's not leaving by choice, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens now with that network, and can it sustain itself with different leadership? Because by all accounts of those who know from the inside, Ailes is extremely hands-on, that he was at every important meeting and made every important decision, and it was his network, despite the fact that he has some high-profile people there. He helped create those people. And is it now able to go off like a little birdie and fly on its own without him, or is it going to suffer without him?
you know, what led to his departure, as you point out, we should say, is the lawsuit filed by Gretchen Carlson, a 50-year-old anchor who was fired from Fox News Channel, that he, Ailes is 76, had sexually harassed her. And then it turns out six other women came forward with similar stories, according to his biographer.
Actually, Rex, it's more than that.
Is that right?
Yeah, they're coming out of the woodwork.
Oh, boy. So, you know...
he denies everything, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
It is important that we say that.
In another era, that might not have been enough to bring somebody down with as much link to the CEO, to Rupert Murdoch, as Ailes had.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that, first of all, added to Ira's lists of his accomplishments, he makes $1 billion a year for that company, $1 billion of profit. That is a lot of money. And the Murdoch kids apparently have no regard for the guy or little regard for the guy, and this offered a way out for them. But he is getting up there, as many of us are. And do you think, Ira, you think he was ever going to retire?
Well, he's 76, and it doesn't look like he's in particularly good health. I don't know whether he was going to retire or not, but, you know, the law of averages says he wasn't going to be there much longer for whatever reason. And Murdoch is 85 years old. His two sons apparently do not share their father's view of the world politically. And so when the father is no longer around, that will be another reason to say what's going to happen to Fox News. What would happen to the New York Post? Would that continue to be the kind of newspaper that it is? Or would that continue to be a newspaper at all? Would the sons be willing to lose as much money as the New York Post does? Maybe they will if the Fox News continues to generate the money that it's doing. But that's why I say the ramifications of this thing are really significant.
Yeah, well, here's what I don't get, though. Fox News is enjoying the biggest year in its history in terms of ratings. And so what this must mean, if in fact, as the signs indicate, that the sons of Rupert Murdoch are instrumental in saying Ailes has to go, notwithstanding the money, it does seem to indicate that the new take of the Murdoch empire may be a bit more responsible, that it is not just about the ratings. Maybe this notion that I believe Fox News created, driving America toward a media environment that is much more partisan, much more divided, that began with Roger Ailes' vision for Fox News. Maybe the Murdochs are going to begin to dismantle that.
You know, when you think about it, Rex, your thoughts are profound here, because they identified the very constituency that Donald Trump is going after right now.
That's right. That's exactly right. And they saw it, and they turned their New York Post toward it, the historically liberal New York Post under Dorothy Schiff, that became a very different paper. 20 years ago, they created this network that aimed at what now we kind of see as the Trump voter. And it's been tremendously successful, with this one little caveat, you have to say. The Fox viewer is the oldest viewer. The average age of the Fox viewer is older than the other cable networks. And it is entirely possible that the sons of Murdoch are seeing the handwriting on the wall, that you can't continue to appeal to a primarily old white demographic in a society that is becoming much more diverse and much less politically monolithic.
Now, we do know that as people get older, things like newspapers, they're less likely to hold a physical newspaper in their hand. So you're looking at it. Certainly public radio is looking at it, because our group is aging. The only hope that some of us have is that it isn't that when they get old, they're going to die and they're not going to be there anymore. The hope we have is that when somebody gets their first mortgage, you know, they'll buy into needing to know more about public affairs. Nevertheless, with that said, our demographics do show us that it gets to be another year older almost every year.
Yeah, exactly. And the difficulty, of course, is, too, that today's technology diffuses so significantly the delivery platform. Young people don't go to a site for information. They wait for the information to find them. They need social media to bring it to them. So as Facebook and Twitter grow ever more powerful as delivery tools, that takes away a lot of the opportunity for monetizing that audience that we have, that public radio has had. It's going to be much more difficult for all of us.
So let's just play this out. Let's, for the sake of argument, say that Ailes' departure will not change anything at Fox News in terms of its presentation and its personnel. is Fox News rooting for Trump to win? It's been said that when Obama won, which was a rebuff, I suppose, to Fox News's philosophy, that was good for Fox News because then they had Obama to dump on for 8 years. Is it a similar kind of thing if Trump loses this election or wins the election?
Well, it's interesting because we do know that the Fox people are closer to the Republicans than they are to the Democrats. But the Republicans themselves are split on Trump. So that, you know, you get the Bushes and some of the real high muckety-mucks who don't like him, who won't come to the convention. Mitt Romney, the former presidential candidate, won't come to the convention. So you wonder, because I've been reading the Post very carefully with an eye towards where are they on Trump? And they're not particularly good.
We're talking about Ailes. They virtually did not cover the Ailes story until the last day. Then they had all of a sudden it was on the front page when it was clear. But how could they have ignored that story all along? It speaks to the culture at that area. I thought I had a brilliant notion, and then I saw on Twitter that others were similarly brilliant, and that was that if Trump were to lose the election, he would then create his own cable news channel, and then he would bring Roger Ailes in to run it. And they would bring Hannity and O'Reilly onto
cool. Well, that's disgusting.
But it turns out that it can't happen at least right away
because they're giving him $40 million.
Yeah, the New York Times says he has a 2-year non-compete clause.
Well, yeah. So. Yeah. Mm. You know, I'm interested in another aspect of this that I don't think you're supposed to say on the radio, but I am interested in the fact that these women have come forward, all very beautiful. People who were anchors and anchors we know.
That's all that he would choose to be anchors. Yeah,
right. But I'm fascinated because Ailes is so ugly as a human being. He's an ugly man. And whether we like it or not in this culture, you know, if you got a square-jawed Bruce Wayne type person and they accused him of coming on, first of all, I doubt they would have if they did. But the understanding of this basically ogre-type person hitting on these beautiful women, often married in other ways, is really understandable to the American public, except that I've seen very little analysis of that phenomenon.
Gretchen Carlson's a former Miss America, you know,
yes,
out of Minnesota.
Of course.
And so that and that is the she's also really smart, by the way, which is the same thing you could say about
Megyn Kelly,
yeah. You know.
Well, there's another one. There is a former Fox personality named Lori Du. I think she was on CNN for a while, and then she mysteriously disappeared from Fox News. And there was a story yesterday about her because they called to get her comment, and through her lawyer is not commenting, but she is about to be writing a book in which she says she'll be describing her interactions with Ailes. Again, the part of the irony of this is that Fox News, the brand of Fox News, even they cannot survive a scandal that would have them turning their back on alleged sexual harassment.
Especially when they're so righteous.
Yes. And so the fact that although Ailes is not admitting to anything, they clearly had to have decided that if they stayed with him, it was going to hurt them in the pocketbook, that sponsors were going to leave him. There'd be a Bill Cosby kind of syndrome where people who you wouldn't think would turn away from a company, even conservative women, cannot be happy with the notion of somebody being harassed in the workplace, because many of them have, whether they're blue-collar workers or office workers. So this all rings true, and Fox had to do something here. And again, the irony is that this is the conservative family values now.
But I think also they wanted him out. I think the kids wanted him out, and I think that that plays heavily into this. And then we don't really know, Ira, where this is going to end. I mean, what we've heard so far are from the women who said no. Yeah. We haven't heard from the people who said yes.
You have a point about that. It could
be.
We don't know.
He denies all these allegations.
Yeah. And these are allegations that go way back. We're talking back to when he was in entertainment in the Mike Douglas show. So this is not new if they're true. Mm-hmm. And again, like with Cosby, you know, you can believe that maybe one or two of them are exaggerated and not true. But when all of these people come out of the woodwork, it's the old where there's smoke, there's fire.
Well, but with the Cosby accusations, you know, he was accused of dropping pills.
Yeah, that was more rape than sexual harassment.
But when you hear the same allegations over and over, I think your point, it's like Senator Bob Packwood of Oregon. Remember,
he had the
same M.O. with each of these women.
No, he got into it. He had to leave because of that.
He did indeed.
Well, they're products of a different generation. It wasn't good then. By then, I mean decades ago, but it's certainly people are not going to put up with it any longer.
So we got to turn to the convention, folks. We have to give our analysis. Here we are. Everybody's been waiting for the news for the media project analysis of the RNC, don't you think?
Of course.
Oh yeah, everybody.
Naturally.
The one question I think that's worth asking is whether it's simply a great exercise in media marketing, because as a matter of fact, the cable networks added coverage. They extended their hours of coverage because there was so much demand to buy advertising, because the sense was that this was going to be a convention that would have a larger than usual audience.
Here's the thing about Trump. You know, everybody in the beginning said, oh my goodness, they plagiarized, they this, they that. But in the end, just as always, he kept it interesting. So, you know, we all thought these conventions were a behemoth. They were
something from the past.
Something from the past, mm-hmm. And the rest of it. But all of a sudden, he kept his thing interesting. Now, there are many people writing me. I don't know about you, but they're writing me and they're saying, you know, this whole thing with the wife and the plagiarism, that was all thought up by Trump. I don't believe a word of it. I think it was just a terrible mistake. But, you know, everybody's got a conspiracy theory about everything.
Well, that's why when you say he kept it interesting, what I was going to say is, do you think he plagiarized? And, you know, did he set up that? Some say he knew what was going to happen with Ted Cruz. Did he set up that?
We know he knew that. He told us he read the speech.
Right, but did he know how? Did he know the reaction? I mean, the argument is...
He planted the reaction.
Right, because the naysayers would tell you that because of the Melania situation and the Cruz situation, that the news then shifted away from Trump and Pence and the convention to these controversies. So that certainly did make it interesting, but I don't know if that's what he wanted. He's Machiavellian enough, you have to almost think it's possible.
I think that is great spin. I heard it from Ed Cox, the New York State Republican chairman, first, that the Ted Cruz situation was a clever orchestration by Donald Trump, that he intentionally let this guy get out there and hang himself.
And then he timed
his. He said he read the speech.
And he timed his arrival in the auditorium to the end of the speech when Cruz was being booed. And somebody this morning as I was driving up was likening it to a worldwide wrestling event, that the villain was on the stage and the hero was coming out of the curtains to do it.
You know?
And when he was introduced the first night, very briefly, he came out with the blue smoke machine and the silhouette. That's right out of Vince McMahon's wrestling organization.
It's true.
He appeared on, by the way. He was at a WrestleMania some years ago.
So let me tell you that in 1972, I'm very much younger, and I get hired by a guy by the name of Charlie Schumann, who takes me down to the ABC thing as a sort of junior league professor assistant to look up things and say them into the green wire so that the people upstairs can sound brilliant. So look it up. Well, there was a man named Herb Kaplow. You guys
remember him,
right?
Yeah.
I'm afraid I don't. Yeah, Herb Kaplow.
He was an ABC guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
And Herb Kaplow finds the script for the Republican convention.
Mm.
And nobody was talking to anybody. And I happen to know the guy who is, I'll never forget it. I happen to know the guy who was in charge, Bob Knowles, of the convention. He was the brother of the Wisconsin governor and the head of the Senate there. Nobody was being allowed to talk. The script said Pat Nixon stands up, turns around three times, waves at the audience, and sits down. More applause, gets up, turns around another three times. So you can see the difference between the well-scripted convention and now looking at what appears to be a much more flimsy Republican circus here. But as Ira is saying, boy, it's interesting stuff. And a lot of people, including a lot of my liberal friends, couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, it was pretty compelling watching, I would think.
And it also helped the anti-media narrative, because the first day the reporters are going around interviewing delegates and others, asking what they thought of the controversy, and they would all say, this is just manufactured by the media. This is just another, and the same thing the next day with Cruz. Oh, this is just manufactured. It just fed, everything sort of fed in. By the way, you mentioned Ed Cox. I'm sure others found the irony that Ed Cox, the son-in-law of Richard Nixon, is the guy there heading the New York delegation, which is putting Trump over the top for the nomination at a time that many people are describing Trump and his speeches as Nixonian.
Exactly. Yeah,
well,
that sort of dark vision, exactly.
We've been in touch with Ed Cox a lot during this convention, and he is one of the cleverest guys.
Yes.
He's yeah. I like the man. I don't agree with much of what he says, but I really like him.
And he is clever, because I always thought he was an empty suit.
No. I think
he's very clever.
Yeah.
He can rock and roll on any subject you give him.
He is able to take a little bit and turn it. I remember saying something to him about how his father-in-law wouldn't be able to succeed in today's Republican Party because, after all, he had wage and price controls. He had environmental things. And he, instead of answering the question of how the Republican Party had shifted to the right, he said, Mr. Nixon did have an amazing domestic agenda, didn't he? And went on to praise his father-in-law. Quite remarkable.
And you know, go home at night.
One of the ironies about this is that when the delegates and others who are pro-Trump attack the media saying, you're against us. In fact, there is a lot of failure on the part of the media to really hold Trump to account for some of the things. Now, there is fact-checking that goes on overnight after his speech and so on. But Margaret Sullivan, the fine Washington Post media columnist who used to be the public editor of the New York Times and before that was the editor of the Buffalo News, Margaret Sullivan makes a point that Leslie Stahl in that famous, 60 Minutes interview where she had the first sit down with the Trump and Pence together, that Leslie Stahl failed to hold Donald Trump to account when he said, I was against the Iraq war from the beginning. Margaret Sullivan points out that Leslie Stahl should have said, no, Mr. Trump, that's a lie. You were not. Because, in fact, he was not. He made statements in support.
He may have told it to his dog, but he didn't tell it to anybody else.
Well, it could be, because what he was saying to everybody else is that we should go in there. And so she, it's hard. It's hard to hold somebody, especially when the camera is rolling and you have a powerful politician right there in front of you. It is hard to hold somebody to account.
I would take some issue with what you said there, Rex. I thought she was unbelievably effective. And I think she really sucked it to him and showed the differences between what he was saying. He said, well, you're after Hillary for this, but Pence said the exact same thing. And, well, he said that. Trump says, well, that's just a mistake, on his part. So
yeah.
I thought she was damn good.
Well, she let him get away with this. And I hope that going forward, because he's using Hillary's record against her, I hope that he's held to account and not allowed to get away with the notion that he was smarter than she was on that issue.
Well, but, the media is being blamed for exactly what you're saying. On the other hand, we're talking about the phenomenon known as water off a duck's back. No matter what the media says, no matter how many times they say he's a liar, everybody says, I don't care.
Well, that goes to the question of whether we are, in fact, in the post-factual era.
He constantly talks about Hillary being a liar. Sadly, that there is evidence to show that that's the case. But you talk about the pot calling the kettle black. There is nobody who twists the facts and outright lies more than Trump for months and months and months, including during part of his acceptance speech the other night. It's just incredible. And I don't know, we could stand on the top of the Empire State Building and yell that he's a liar, and the people who like him are going to just shrug it off. Again, we're in the post-factual era.
Fact-checking seems not to work. The Washington Post has Fact-Checker. We have PolitiFact in many states, as well as National PolitiFact. Something like 70% of the claims made by Donald Trump that were submitted to PolitiFact for review, they found to be either untrue or their even lower category, pants on fire. It does make you wonder if voters care less about facts than they do about image, then how can you depend upon democracy? How can you depend upon people to make a good decision in democracy? That's why we need good journalism. That's because...
You see, but I think, Rex, that you're too hard on yourself and on IRA, you journalists, because what you do is you think somehow we've let them get away with it. But as you point out, we have all of these mechanisms which call him a liar and nobody gives a damn. And as I said on a previous program, we played a little bit of it, Calvin Trilling just said, when in doubt, just lie.
On that point, folks, we're going to have to let it go. When in doubt, just lie. All right.
Bob Arum, the boxing promoter, was caught in a lie, and he said, I was lying then, I'm telling the truth now.
All right. Okay, Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith, the professor, the publisher, and the editor. We thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Such interesting people, when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people, it's wonderful to represent the guild. now, publishers of such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.